buscaban huir, olvidar el terror de la guerra.
Trabajaba con los niños del orfanato. Cuando liberaron Bielorrusia, trajeron de ahí a 28 niños huérfanos. ¡Ay, qué mal sentía por ellos! Perdona, no puedo. Durante los recreos me rodeaban todos y trataban de contar algo sobre sí mismos. Me acuerdo de un niño muy hablador, Simeón. Le pregunto, Simeón, ¿cómo viniste aquí? Me responde, cuando liberaron Leningrado, nos empezaron a evacuar y durante la evacuación murió mi tía y me llevaron hasta aquí. Así eran los niños.
Siguió trabajando hasta los 55 años, cuando pasó a encargarse de sus propios nietos y con el tiempo también de sus bisnietos. Hoy, a sus 100 años, son ellos quienes se ocupan y cuidan de Yelena, quien por su parte, al hacer un balance de su vida, dice estar contenta. Siempre cumplí con todas mis obligaciones, trabajé como todos y ahora no se olvidan de mí. Un siglo con todas sus dificultades, la vida de Yelena Romashkina, quien con sus 100 años es uno de los rostros que encarna la hazaña del pueblo soviético en la victoria contra la Alemania nazi de Hitler. Galo Fernández, RT, Saransk.
El presidente Vladimir Putin habló del daño causado por las guerras.
La guerra siempre es un desafío a la propia vida, a todo lo mejor en ella. Nosotros recordamos la tragedia de las dos guerras mundiales, las lecciones de la historia. Eso no nos permite estar ciegos. En las nuevas amenazas van revelándose las mismas, antiguas y terribles características. Egoísmo e intolerancia, nacionalismo agresivo y reclamos de exclusividad. Entendemos la seriedad de estas amenazas. Es importante para todos los países, para toda la humanidad, darse cuenta que el mundo es muy frágil y su estabilidad fortalece nuestro deseo común de escuchar, confiar y respetarse mutuamente.
En otras noticias, el titular de las Naciones Unidas ha dejado claro que la llamada globalización tiene severos daños colaterales. Jordi Trujols amplía la información.
El secretario general de Naciones Unidas destacó este viernes en La Habana que pese a los beneficios que ha traído la globalización, como la gran cantidad de personas que han salido de la pobreza extrema, también ha provocado desigualdades que dificultan el acceso a la salud, la educación y la justicia.
Estas desigualdades hacen más difícil para las personas ganar un salario decente y vivir con dignidad. Por más de una generación, los ingresos del 1% más rico del mundo han crecido a un ritmo dos veces mayor que los del 50% más pobre.
Durante la ceremonia inaugural del 37º periodo de sesiones de la Comisión Económica para América Latina y el Caribe, Guterres destacó que el aumento de la desigualdad se ha convertido en el rostro de la globalización, una situación que ha provocado insatisfacción, intransigencia y desequilibrios sociales que han afectado especialmente a los jóvenes.
Las personas se preguntan con razón, ¿qué mundo es este en el que un puñado de hombres, porque los más ricos del mundo son hombres, en la extrema riqueza la desigualdad de género también existe, acumula la misma cantidad de riqueza que la mitad más pobre de la humanidad?
El secretario general destacó el efecto transformador de la tecnología en nuestras tareas cotidianas y en el ámbito laboral a través de la bioingeniería y la inteligencia artificial.
Debemos aprovechar el potencial de la cuarta revolución industrial y protegernos al mismo tiempo de los riesgos que plantea. Este es probablemente el reto más difícil que vamos a tener en las dos próximas décadas.
El titular de la ONU añadió que esta revolución ha de representar una fuente de bienestar y no un peligro capaz de producir consecuencias negativas para las sociedades y las economías. A su vez, destacó que es necesario redefinir el concepto de desarrollo, en especial en un entorno mundial cada vez más complejo y multipolar, especialmente en las regiones de transición y las naciones de ingresos medios, como las de América Latina y el Caribe. Necesitamos una economía mundial que beneficie a todos y cree oportunidades para todos. Necesitamos construir una globalización equitativa, recordó Guterres. Jordi Trujols, Naciones Unidas, Nueva York.
Y aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RT, de Telesur, del colectivo Más Voces, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Toshli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Dear listeners of Free Radio Santa Cruz, we air a number of KPFK KPFA, KPFT and WBAI programs that we selected for their interesting and informative content. They are good programs produced by volunteers, just like us. To keep their station on the air, they run pledge drives. We want you to know that we get these shows for free, and if you like them, you could consider sending money to those radio stations. Here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, we have chosen not to have pledge drives, but we certainly can use your help. If you wish, you can make a donation with PayPal from our website, www.freakradio.org, or you could send a check or money order to FRSC, P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show.
This is Freak Radio Santa Cruz. Fuck the FCC.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, the May 10th, 2018 edition. With interviews with numerous folks, report from Berkeley from Carol Denny on her pursuit of the First Amendment on the streets and in the suites. We'll hear about that. Then we're going to go to Brent Adams. Actually, we'll begin with Brent Adams. He gives the Santa Cruz report, and an interesting report it is. Also a report from a landlady who gives you the other side in her own way of the rent control dispute, although this is actually a successful time, as I understand it, although we haven't had the official count, for the rent control and just eviction protection initiative. And a few other things, too, so stay with us.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So, not that it matters a hell of a lot, but in a certain sense it does. The proposal to have the Santa Cruz National Guard Armory as the new shelter site and possibly campground site, it's a little unclear. It sounds to me like it was more shelter than campground. Proposed by the city council some weeks ago as one of the four alternatives, and then suddenly decided as the alternative for locating folks who will be dumped from the Boneyard River Street barbed wire campground at the end of the month of June. That's been suddenly discovered to be unavailable. This, according to the story, Santa Cruz National Guard Armory at the La De La Vega Golf Course. I'm reading from Jessica York's story in the Sentinel today, actually, or put online recently, will not be used as the city's next temporary homeless shelter, city officials announced Tuesday. Actually, I heard that on at the city council meeting online. As the city seeks a temporary indoor site for its second of a three-phased plan to create a new area of homeless shelter, the armory was identified as a top option out of the four named sites last month, although it too had its share of NIMBY whiners, ranters, and smearers that came up to denounce the homeless at the city council mic, and actually some of them were even remaining even after Martine Bernal had announced it wasn't going to be happening, because they suddenly found out that California's military department's Colonel Darren Bender, according to Jessica York, told a city liaison on Monday night that the National Guard has scheduled extensive site renovation work to begin around August or September and to extend for about a year. City manager told Santa Cruz City Council the letter with similar information was sent to an estimated 200 residents Tuesday morning who had contacted the city about the use of the vacant armory building. No doubt going, wah, 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 or no, no, please don't do it to us. Oh, no, don't put those homeless people in our neighborhood. Oh, God, God, no, no. On Friday, asked for an update on negotiations with state officials for lease of the property. Bernal and Assistant City Manager Tina Schell said during a conference call they were aware that site renovations were planned but did not have details on its timeline. And, of course, my immediate reaction, which you'll hear me talking about with Brent Adams about this issue, was just what the fuck do they think they're doing? I mean, they have had months to get from the California military. Thank you, a California military. I wasn't aware California had a military. I guess just not living in the 21st century anymore. That there was this use for the armory being planned in August and September. I suppose it's possible it was just sprung upon the city by Colonel Darren Bender, but it seems unlikely that those kind of repairs were not known about before. Maybe they were cooked up before to make sure that the homeless don't pollute the sacred military armory. I don't know. Anyway, that's sort of the nub of this story. And again, I prefaced all this by saying, who cares about this anyway? Because it concerns a small number of people in a highly controlled environment that doesn't address the needs of the majority of homeless people in Santa Cruz. You know, and it gets the riposte to that as well. It helps us some people, and it helps the people it helps, doesn't it? And I wonder if it really does. I mean, it does, of course, but if it's being used as a way of avoiding the issue, then maybe it helps less than you would think it does. So now, if you want to follow the chitter-chatter, the new open space possibilities are the ones that they dumped but are going to consider again will be the Poganip Park near the former clubhouse. That's one that Huff, actually, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, has suggested for 3 decades or 2.5 decades. On property adjacent to the city recycling center and dump on Demio Lane, and on land next to County's Emmeline Center's Health and Human Services Complex. And, of course, it's rather genteelly put by Jessica York. Representatives from each of these three sites spoke or wrote to the council in opposition last month. Woo-woo. Anyway, let's begin this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides with a Brent Adams interview, which I did just a few minutes ago, actually. All right, well, today is Thursday, the 10th of May, and I'm on the phone with Warming Center and Storage Program activist Brent Adams. Hello, Brent.
Hello.
And, I just reviewed your brief presentation and the 2 minutes allowed you at the last shitty council meeting day before yesterday, and you spoke about a storage program coming up that you actually have spoken about here on the radio as well before. What's cooking with that?
Yeah, day and night storage program. You can find information right now at the warmingcenterprogram.com and with the pull-down tab, day and night storage program. Bailey, it's our, we brought it to the community last summer, and early in the winter, we were going to partner with the city program under the same name, only designed quite differently. City backed out, and we've been building advocacy and trying to raise some funding and designing the program. So we're actually ready to start. We've converted a vehicle, a large vehicle that'll be able to contain as many as 80 plastic bins, 20-gallon bins, Rubbermaid. All locked in. We have the program designed already, and I will be kicking it off with the help of another hired employee. 2 hours in the morning, it'll be parked downtown, and 2 hours in the evening, that's likely 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., prior to business hours, and then after business hours, 5 to 7 p.m. We're still trying to locate the location. We reached out to the city and the county. We do have a meeting with Rainey Marr, the county homeless coordinator, as she's called, a week from Friday, actually. And we haven't heard back from anybody within the city, although I did have a street side conversation with city manager Martin Bernal, who said, please, you know, forward the information. I made a public statement at public comments Tuesday, and they have the documentary. I mean, so they have the document that you can find online that lets them know about the project and our invitation to them. It's on, you know, they have an email and a hard copy. So we're really, I'm kind of surprised that I'm hearing crickets from their side right now. It may be sort of a, you know, political or their strategy just to see what we have coming. I know that, I don't know what, you know, but we really need to talk to people within the city government because we're going to, this program will focus a population of at least 50 people, concentrate them in an area of the community. We're not, you know, in so much as to pick up and drop off personal belongings. And the reason I say that is because imagine they'll be taking their bedding in the evening off to go sleep, and I don't think they're going to travel more than a half mile to a mile. So we will likely be concentrating people. So the question is, where is the most appropriate place to do that?
Well, I remember that you made that same request of the city council and the community on Tuesday at the 5:30 anal communications, where they let you fart out a few words before cutting you off. That's my general impression of the value of oral communications, as they call it. And I know that Terrazas, the mayor, had only one question, which is, have you talked to the county yet? That was the only thing he had to say that I remember about this. We spoke about this earlier in a previous broadcast, and you told me you were going to be beginning this the second week in May. Well, you know, we're in the second week in May. I'm not saying you should be or you weren't telling the truth, but you may get no cooperation at all from the city. If that's the case, and I know you may be risking your political life by saying anything about this, but what do you think you intend to do, considering what you're really trying to serve is not the whims of the city, but the needs of a number of homeless people? That's been your concern for years.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to balance two things there. And that came up with my critique of the Freedom Sleepers, which means we could go do these things. The question is how far down the road will we get? If we really want to benefit people over years and build programs that are long-lasting and not going to be immediately undercut by either, you know, a community group resistance movement like happened with Sanctuary Camp early on. We did a lot of advocacy work and then had a lot of momentum, and then immediately a resistance movement came up. Warming Center had never seen that, mainly because we were very measured in our approach, and we had everything, you know, stabilized as much as we can. So to that, the reason I'm mentioning all that is because we want to give appropriate time for the city to respond. We have a word out to CHIP, Downtown Business Association. It's appropriate that that we make a presentation to the DTA, and that we have that meeting, initial meeting with Rainey Marr before we start. And we're also developing an advocacy support group so it's just not me and my two-person team and other employees and or interns. We've just sent out a group email and welcoming everybody in the community who wants to participate. And I mean anybody.
I know. I got one of those invitations from you, Brent. And it doesn't have a date on it. I'm wondering, would you like to put out a date?
What I did was we did send out one inviting specific people who we've already been working with.
Uh-huh.
And then additionally, then we put out the open invitation so that way we wouldn't have just everybody who's anybody showing up. You'd have to email me and request the time and place. That way I know how many people are coming, the room to reserve ahead of time at Cruise Isle, because they have different size rooms. And then I can have some, like, we really are reaching out to specific people, but anybody who really wants to, they can ask. You know,
well, when is the projected time for this, I should say?
It's Wednesday. It's Wednesday.
So it would be next week?
Yeah, correct. It's 16th.
And the projected time in the evening would be, what, 7 or something?
I'm not going to state that.
So it'll be sometime.
If people want to come, have people. You may email me at warmingcenterprogram@gmail. Call me at 234-9848. I just don't want to put out an all call for the entire community. That's not really what it's about.
Right, but generally speaking, if people want to decide when and if they can come, it's sometime on Wednesday, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Wednesday evening.
Uh-huh.
That is really, in so much like, imagine worst case scenario. There's a fear, unfounded or founded, that we're going to concentrate people near a business district, and all of a sudden that there's going to be, that concentration level is going to have some adverse effect on either businesses or residents, something like that. And we want to, we have a lot to say about that, of course, but we want this advocacy group to clearly understand what's at stake, the benefit and the pitfalls, and that we get ahead of any of this stuff by, creating a plan, have a group of people, including business owners, residents, government officials, to sit, before us and talk this out, and then come up with, a contingency plan, maybe work with us. We're still trying to specifically cite this location.
So there's not going to be an actual starting date until you get some buy-in from the city or from the businesses?
If the city never responds to our request, then we'll go ahead. But we gave them, we're giving them ample time to participate.
They've had many months, Brent, since they cut off your program.
I know. But we're re-upping this. We reset the whole thing. So that we're calling this a reset. We know they have lots of things to, but we just would like to at least see a reply to an email. I mean, we haven't even seen that from the city yet. Even Chris Crone, Sandy Brown, who've been off the reservation on homeless issues that we've been bringing to the fore, and have had very little, this is my critique now of them, have little thoughtful or critical stuff to say, questioning where the city's moving.
Right.
One of the reasons we might hear silence from the city is because of my sometimes pointed outspoken critiques of where the city's going. They're about to raise taxes to fund some of this stuff. And I think they're in the wrong direction. So maybe they don't want to meet with me because I haven't been supportive and I've been critical. But I think that's ludicrous. I think a professional, a city has to meet with entities like ours. We're a 501c3 California charitable organization, operating a shelter within Santa Cruz over the last 4 years. You got to meet with us. You got to reply with an email. Let me finish. Otherwise, that's a bigger question that will come up.
Right.
Why isn't the city even answering emails for an organization like ours? And I think it's not for me to raise that question. The question is, what is really going on?
Whether the city...
Let me just say, I think I just totally took a tangent there. We got to get back on track here.
Well, I want to respond to that, which is, the city has been irrational, as have most cities. They do not respond rationally to the needs of homeless people or the fiscal realities or the housing realities. We've known that for decades. I mean, that's nothing new, and you've known it personally for 4 or 5 years while you've tried to work with the city, and will no doubt continue to try to work with the city.
But we're a shelter operator.
Whatever. Paul Lee had the same problem, I'm sure, himself. He got some cooperation, but he ran a few small programs for a while.
Nearly every church, over 250 people participating in the nightly shelters.
That served 80 people a night at max. That's right.
And it was a horrible program which required a lot of money, involved in vans, and ultimately died. So, you know, I mean...
It predated any other shelter locally. That was the first shelter. So they were kind of, you know, making it up.
Well, I think Kuroda had a first shelter in the 80s. But, yeah, I mean, it certainly was a bigger shelter, you know.
Right. Hey, so what might be happening, and I'm flying blind here, they might be just trying to circle their wagons and figuring out what the city response is going to be to this. I think what they've got to do is figure out, okay, what the fuck is Brent Adams doing here, and what can the city, you know?
Brent, you've been very clear about what you're doing. You have not been attempting to hide anything or soft pedal it or even hard pedal it. You've been pretty overt about it in these broadcasts and in your conversations, you know, at the oral communications, and I imagine in your written communications with the city council. The question for me is not trying to guess what these, calling them clowns and idiots on this issue may sound cruel or counterproductive, but I think it's quite accurate.
I'm not signing on.
You don't have to. My issue is, what are you going to be doing? When will you start the shelter program, if you're going to do it at all, or is it? That's it. I don't give a shit about what they do. I mean, I know you do, and I understand if you can get their cooperation and buy-in, and all these considerations you pose are important ones, but frankly, they aren't responding to you. So, given that, are you going to still begin?
Oh, yeah, totally. We're ready to... I could have started this morning. The thing is, we I'm trying to be measured here, trying to be more professional at it. We're not trying to spring this and just do this at the community. Yes, we're serving a very needy population, and we're doing, you know, the altruistic, and we're doing it, you know, a well-designed way, but part of that also is considering the needs of the community at large, residents, businesses, city interests. You know, I have to play in that pool. I may not think it's a valid or agree with it all the time, but that's the lay of the land that we're doing this program in. It's not just in a vacuum.
Are you giving them a deadline? I mean, is there a time beyond which you're going to say, hold it, we're starting? People are losing their shit every day. It's very nice for us to wait around, try to get, you know, the hat of respectability, but they aren't going to give it to us. We're starting. Is there a deadline for you?
I'm going to actually let that advocacy group have some say in that decision, so that it's not me making that final decision.
So right now there's no deadline?
Correct.
Okay.
Now, we expect to be up and running, you know, within the next month. But, I'm ready. I'm going to be ready to go by the time of that advocacy meeting. I'm going to give them a tour of the facility. We're going to break it all down, hold it up to the light. And if we're missing anything, and if I forgot something, or if it feels challenging in some other way, I will make those considerations. I think it's more appropriate now to move to a brain trust rather than my vision and my articulation of what I think it needs to be done based on, you know, let's move to another stage and let the community involvement have a role. I believe in the project that much that I'll be less defensive and more open to hear criticism, and if somebody's really pointed and they're blocking for some reason, let's address their argument.
Right, but they're not even talking to you at all. That's the problem. And the other problem is,
like I said, I gave an invitation to Chip, and I'm giving an invitation to another business owner downtown who's been interacting with us, and a so-called housing, a housing creator or whatever, a housing provider, somebody who's actually been against the rental movement, the rental ordinance movement.
Rent profiteer, in other words. Yes, I'm familiar with those.
That person has been supportive of this idea because, of course, that person realizes it will benefit landlords and all businesses. And
supportive with money, supportive with time. How supportive? With what?
Oh, no money.
Yeah, right.
Of course
he talks good. Okay, fine.
You know these people with money, they always float the idea that they'll give you money, but it never shows up.
The point is, you gave me, you know, reason to believe that the second week in May you would be beginning this program, whether or not you heard from the city. And now it seems it's been projected into June already as to whether that's going to happen. I know it's nice to say, well, I want an advocacy group to do it. I'm not going to be the personal dictator, yada, yada, yada. And I appreciate appreciate that, you know, politically in a way. You know, I'm just, it's important to me that I, you know, you put a lot of work into this. You've gotten a lot of people organized to do this. It seems to me important that, you know, you do it. And, it you know, at least as a person who's looking at it and contributing zero to the effort other than publicizing what you're saying, that's, anyway, so you've gone through that. Maybe we should turn to something else since nothing seems to be happening here except perhaps a meeting next Wednesday, perhaps a meeting with the director.
You know, we've been working on an entity who's offering us matching grant.
Right.
And I'm literally building out the unit today for a second time. We've made a purchase of 80 plastic bins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot going on, you know.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying nothing's going on until it starts, as far as I'm concerned. But I hear you. I mean, obviously, there's prep for it. The other thing I've noticed, you know, and I looked into on the Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz website the other day, and you had some interesting videos. Any kind of audio updates for people as to what you've been doing for the last week or two on that, or what you think they should particularly note?
I really haven't been marking a lot. We can say right away, of course, again, more back on the city, that phase two is hitting some snags. You probably know what I'm talking about. The armory looks like it's not going to happen.
Oh, definitely. That's what Martine Burnell said. There's no armory.
Have you talked about that yet? So they rose three possibilities. Or four possibilities of site locations, including Emmeline, Dimeo Land, Pogonip, and De La Viega. And they went with De La Viega, but it seemed that, like a lot of us do when we float ideas, you know, like, oh, we're going to do it over there, you know, but they didn't actually have any confirmation agreement with De La Viega. Even initial conversations, it's funny that the city would show themselves as acting half-assed in this way. I got to be really careful. Look at how I talk about this.
Well, I got to tell you that is what I think any person looking at this would say, is you've had 6 months to work on this issue, and surely, and then more recently, when you announced you were, you know, considering different proposals as dictated to do so by the city council, Susie O'Hara and Martine Burnell obviously should have asked the armory guy before they brought back their proposal. It's ridiculous.
Initial.
You know, I mean, you know, I don't think you're, you know, you may be, you know, bold and bald in your language, but the fact of the matter is the facts speak for themselves.
Yeah, I find it a little shocking a lot of us do that. You see us in meetings floating an idea almost as though it's real. For instance, look at the Association of Faith Communities and their parking program. They literally came to a meeting and said the Seventh-day Adventist campground out on Old Santa Cruz Road was a doer, and they hadn't even had word one with that program. But a lot of us do that. You know, we saw that with the Depot Park people, and even Sanctuary Camp. You know, you're trying to generate support while you're building your airplane in the air. You know, it's like.
Brent, remember that the people who are trying to generate support, they weren't generating support. I think they were simply trying to, you know, they have this magnificent architectural three-stage plan that's supposed to work. And what they're really doing is generating opposition. There was virtually one person after another who came and complained, "It's in my neighborhood, get out of here. Those bums, those child molesters are coming." You know, that shit. Which they won't stand against.
Easy for them, you're right.
You know, I mean, so anyway, so I'm interested in what you're doing to me that educates the community.
So,
what about Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz? Have you discovered?
I saw that I did some investigatory footwork. You know, where are people? Here's the big question. I don't know if we talked about it. I went to San Francisco last weekend to check out Mayor Farrell. He's the new mayor who ran on partially on the platform of eradicating tent camping
right.
in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And Proposition Q a year and a half ago, was passed. No more tents in the city. And he actually fulfilled his campaign pledge by a week and a half ago, eradicating every single tent. That's as many as 300 tents, many more improvised structures, as they call them, in the Mission area, Lower Mission District, and Tenderloin area. So I was like, wow, that's huge. What does it look like? So I went up there to take a peek. Yeah, those tents are mostly gone, and they They erected the riot fencing everywhere that the encampments were, so they...
And we'll get back to this gloomy saga in a moment, folks. But first, a little cheery music to lighten the mood.
I've got too many questions in my mind, and I've got too many answers to find. Can I give up all I've imagined? Am I am magical enough for this to happen? Because I like you.
I like you.
I like you.
I like you.
And like can lead to like. And like can lead to love. Sure as the stars above, I'd really like to kiss you. Oh, oh. Can I be the man you're looking for? Can I be your girl forevermore? I'll try real hard not to lose her. I'll try to be less of a loser.
Because I like
you. I like you.
I like you.
I like you. And like can lead to like. And like can lead to love. Sure as the stars above, I'd really like to fuck you. Kiss you. Fuck you. Kiss you. Fuck you. Because I like you, I like you, I like you, I like you. And like can lead to like. And like can lead to love. Sure as the stars above, I'd really like to
hold
you,
squeeze
you, chat you, rip you, rim you, rape you, kill you, fist you, fuck you.
And that was, of course, Garfunkel and Oates. I played you this song before, some shows back, but it was a sort of a less, shall we say, clear and tuneful version. So this one came straight from their disc, All Over Your Face. Now back to Brent Adams, talking about the grim and gloomy situation up in San Francisco and down in Santa Cruz for the majority of folks outside trying to shelter themselves at night.
It's difficult for people to reestablish camps. The reason I mention that is we ask the question, where did everybody go? Oh, they're all over there still. They're hanging their heads. A lot of them will tell you stories that their stuff was thrown away while they were trying to, you know how it is.
Yeah, they move a block away and set up again is what they do. That's what they do.
No. They didn't do that this time around.
Oh, really?
This time the city, police department, public works, locked the entire city down with barricaded fences everywhere. They barricaded all the likely areas. It was a full blitz, Robert. It was nuts. To the point where you go through those areas right now and you're hard-pressed to find a fucking tent. That is a mind blower. So the reason I mention it is, so I did find where people are. They headed not a block over or a few blocks. They went all the way out to India, India Landing, all the way up to Bayview. They're way the fuck in the extreme east, southeast side of the city, shockingly so. And that is a great distance for people to travel. I don't know how they got out there. Maybe the DPW drove some of them out there. But I did find new tent encampments out in that area there.
Have you established rows
of RVs. The reason I mention it, Robert, is it mainly highlights what happens to Santa Cruz. You actually drive through Santa Cruz at night now, and you see a stark reduction in visible homelessness. Like, of course, there's no camping at City Hall or the library or the post office, and the camp in San Lorenzo Valley has been removed. So, but what's happened is you don't see people very much in doorways of Santa Cruz in downtown. So where did everybody go? They are really beaten out by the five policing districts, and they're forced into more precarious places. We have some people in Depot Park, a lot, and they're cleaning up and maintaining the cleanings, not just letting them recamp along Highway 1 at the Highway 1 interchange of River Street, Highway 9, and then the railroad tracks. So it's kind of amazing that the cities put in the these other districts are putting, they're really tightening the screws, Robert. So the, we have to ask, beg the question, where the fuck did people go? And they're out in the Pogo Nip. They're more out along the tracks, down, towards the lagoon. And they're more mobile than ever. They're not, lingering, and at night, they're getting when they do lay down, they're getting awoken by, police department that, and you, maybe you can, tell me this with some, historical memory. I never have heard, like, usually 3 a.m. is a time of when there's not an overlapping police force. They usually go do their DUIs and stuff, and they have a shift change. But right now we're seeing cops doubling up downtown at 3:30 and 4 in the morning, and they're going out to wake people up. We're seeing more first alarms than ever. You'll have people trying to sleep at the public library, and they'll lay down at around, you know, 11 or 12. By 4 a.m., 3:30 a.m., they're being woken up. There's the new, there's another security company, Wolf or something like that, Black Wolf. They're doing spaces, you know, all around CBS and at the Prophet Elias Church, Orthodox Church across from the library, and they wake people up regularly. We're seeing a lot of that more than ever, that it's so similarly to San Francisco, there's just a full-on, all-out blitz.
Brent, have you established any phone connections, cell phone connections, with any of the campments here or there?
In San Francisco? Well, in Santa Cruz, basically people just keep calling for blankets. People, what they're doing is, I think the initial claims that the police chief had said that you need to allow 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep. You know, we got to really look at that document that he had put out there in press releases, because what I'm getting is lots of people being woken up. No one's getting proper sleep. They're getting blankets taken. So my reports are that people just need, it's warmer than ever, but people need blankets. But in terms of what you're talking about, I'm not getting a lot of street reports of camping.
In terms of establishing for yourself a network of connections with these places so you can get, should you want to find out what's going on, do you have any way of doing that?
No, I mean, it's hard for me to do everything, you know, to be
course,
up 24
course.
Hours a day.
I
have, what I'm going to do right now is, in the meantime, do a little more street outreach in the next week and find out, you know, what the movement is for homeless outside in Santa Cruz, find out where people are, find out what the stories are, kind of do quick work of it, if that answers your question.
Do you think that there's more likelihood for there to be the kind of, at least uniting in a certain way that you were trying to get at the you know, back in September, October, November, with the Coalition on Homelessness forming here in Santa Cruz?
Did you say working with the police department? Is that what you said?
No, working with the homeless.
Oh, I see.
And with housed people, too.
I don't remember advocating working with specifically with the homeless population.
Well, you had a meeting in San Lorenzo Park, remember?
Oh, San Lorenzo. Oh, that's right. We were trying to help people within the encampment better themselves. It turned out that they, it was like hurting. They were. We, you know, we gave them clothing and lots of soup. Hey, guys. And a lot of it was, people not, you know, I actually had a resistance to that. The only way I could have actually got any foothold to do something like that was to be to camp with them, because they really saw me as it doesn't matter if I give them blanket after blanket. A lot of people did respect us and support us, but, the way it showed up was, the people weren't welcoming a meeting, and I saw other people trying to do that too. We tried it twice, and we got, you know, like, for instance, how do we protect each other from people stealing things at night. Well, you know, half the people we're talking about are the very people who are stealing things at night. How do we keep syringes from being found by parks officers? We have to, you know, clean up after ourselves. Well, a lot of those, it's very weird to, in a Wild West encampment like that, to try to build some consensus around agreements. So I backed out. I backed off. I realized that I wasn't from their culture or community, and I was trying to tell them what I thought was a value, and they didn't all share the same values with me. So a lot of people did. So the question is, being more from that community, finding people from that community to stand up, and there was some violence last summer that was stark. Like some people from out of town camping immediately, some people being released from jail, camping with them, and you know, we had some people like just there's not a lot of it got recorded, but a guy like had his face slashed for being in a verbal argument, and there were death threats and stuff. It was the Wild West out there. I never felt in danger physically ever myself, but anyway. So let me double back to your question.
I mean, I also let me interrupt briefly to say that when I spoke to people out there, I found the same thing, which was that there was not a big problem with violence among the people who lived there. Although people who didn't live there were very regarded it as a dangerous place. So, you know,
once you were there, and if you were not identifying people.
Hang on just a second. I got an incoming call, Brent. Don't go away.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead, Brent. So, I was recommending to people they continue to keep checking in with this homeless outside in Santa Cruz, as well as possibly, get to your meeting on Wednesday to see what they can contribute or what they can learn or whatever. If you decide you want them to come, if it's a select group.
We want anybody who wants to come can come.
Okay.
I just need to know what that's going to look like, and have some control over it. You know, anybody can, once they find out what the date and time is, they can invite other people. But we are going to be starting a fundraising campaign for the project. We're starting with pretty small funding. We don't have the year funding. We have enough to probably get us through the spring and most of the summer. We're going to do fundraising campaign with an amount of matching grant that's already been pledged through June, July, August is going to be a big fundraising. You know, we'll probably have a dinner. You know, we'll see how it's going. It'll determine. You know, the behavior of the program will determine what shape the thing takes. If there's good news in the Sentinel and good times about it, and it's operating well,
right,
and see a reduction.
Any reports from the River Street campground, which is, of course, due to close in about a month and a half?
Let's see. I would like to hear more negative, more positive. A few people had their, they used the storage in the camp, the storage bins. A few people have reported their stuff had gone missing. We heard that about the winter shelter too. You know, you stow your stuff in, and then it gets kind of jumbled up. And the question is, but I can't report that authentically. That was from somebody who had gone to the hospital, and when they came out of the hospital, their stuff was missing.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, people, I think it's, I'm not getting much. People like it. It's better than anything that they've had. But of course, I would never. I can't imagine you're going to get anything but glowing reports, because it's a nanny space, meaning you get free. You get your food provided weekly. Donations are brought there. It's safe by virtue of three layers of security. So it's all kind of done for you. There's a shuttle to it. And the question is, we need to be asking, is what is that triage sort of navigation center process looking like right now? They're stating that all the county services are being focused on that encampment. What does that truly look like, Robert? Are people getting, SSI help? Are they getting better medical care? Are they getting, housing navigator? A good friend of mine just got hired on as Homeless Services Center, Housing, Rapid Response, whatever it's called. Because there's a new funding to keep people back into housing. So he's given me some word on that. There are, you know, like where are the housing that's available. There's funding. The HSC can now offer like twice the deposit that's being requested, and a first and a last. So if somebody, if they can find housing, so I'll let you know what's up with that.
Okay.
That first, yeah.
Well, I'm running out of time, but are there anything else you want to mention, Brent?
No, I did it on Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz. I did test the video. There was a flyer underneath the Highway 1 bridge overpass over the levee. There was a flyer there that said county emergency shelter, and I'm not sure what that meant. I had a phone number, so I called it, and it went to a dead number.
Yeah, I saw that video.
So I encourage people to always check. It's a Facebook page called Homeless Outside in Santa Cruz. Also, we are warmingcenterprogram.com. Lots of projects going on there. If you want to reach me, warmingcenterprogram@gmail.com. The hotline is 234-9848. And we thank the community for support. And look forward to Day and Night Storage Program opening soon.
Yeah, be nice. You might also get in touch with Merity to, you know, maybe up broadcast her list of free services, which she tries to keep pretty updated, or did a year ago.
She's long gone.
Oh, no, I hadn't known about that.
Oh, yeah, she moved away about 6 to 9 months ago.
Oh, boy, I'm out of date.
Any contact. She stopped updating the thing. And moved on to her new life wherever she went to live with her daughter someplace, and asked to be removed from all email lists.
Ah, interesting.
You know, here's the thing that's coming up relating to that. The city put some energy with the recommendations into a list of services. That's the thing that I routinely go through and do, check all the phone numbers to see if they're valid. This still is not a one-stop place where you can find information. So Merity's plus the city and counties, we're developing one with the Warming Center. It will have a page of, you know, a bunch of lists there. But we'll talk about that soon.
Sounds good. And again, your number for people to call is
234-9848. That's the Warming Center hotline. It's usually answered, like you just got an answer today.
Yeah, and I thank you and appreciate you doing that, Brent.
Thank you. Thanks, Robert.
You take care, man.
Be well.
Bye-bye.
And, of course, those lists of numbers given out by the city and the county are notoriously bad. In fact, they don't lead to any real shelter services at all. Certainly, there's no emergency shelter in the city or county that's actually open and available, that hasn't got a long waiting list. Emergency shelter apparently is a thing of the past. We used to have it decades ago, but now they've decided on this new spurious bullshit about pathways to housing that don't exist as a way of sort of placating their own liberal consciences or their own conservative sense of, well, we want to help the worthy poor, that sort of thing. It's a sad kind of form of self-deception. All the money goes into the police, the military, corporate num-nums, and so forth. So, an announcement or two, or maybe just one. The May issue of Street Spirit will be available shortly at the Sub Rosa Cafe when Huff has its next meeting, maybe even before then, if you happen to get in when the cafe is open, and if I happen to get down there early. The May issue of Street Spirit, probably online as well, at thestreetspirit.org. There are two articles by activist Carol Denny, Cornerstone Carol, as I sometimes call her, up in Berkeley. Musician, songwriter, gadfly of all kinds, and a community activist about the attacks on RV dwellers up in Berkeley and the new sit not lest you be screwed or pressured or hassled or have your property taken in the great liberal city of Berkeley. I have an interview with her that covers a number of topics which touch on, I guess, those slightly, but mostly cover her adventures of a few days ago when she stuck to her guns, probably got sore feet or maybe sore thighs pedaling around dealing with free speech issues that came up in Berkeley. I'm going to play that now. But wait, let's first listen to a little more Garfunkel and Oates before plunging into Carol Denny. We'll be right back.
into the bar, cause that's how we do. Garf, Uncle O, and the rest of the crew. Give a dollar to my homegirl and watch that bitch go. She hits up the jukebox and puts on Jim Croce.
Operator, can you help me place this call?
Well, we're laughing and talking and the drinks are flowing, and I'm liking the direction this night is going. But then I look up and something has changed. Everyone around us looks fucking deranged. I look to my left, I look to my right, nothing but Von Dutch hats in sight. With super tight abs and super tan skin, I swear this ain't the club that I walked in. The techno music starts to play, and the room smells like Axe body spray. I'm like gold in my ear with no gold in my ear. Please tell me what the hell happened here. Yo, it ain't pretty, but you know it's the truth. This party just took a turn for the douche.
For the douche, for the motherfucking douche. Thought it was a perfect party. Now it's just a lot of Ed Hardy. This party just took a turn for the douche.
Guess I can't beat him, so I'm gonna join him. Need some douche phrases and I'm gonna coin him. Put my Bluetooth in and I'm on my way. Gonna be a motherfucking douchebag today. Gonna groom my beard like a bonsai tree. Wax off my chest like Mr. Miyagi. Got a Chinese tat, don't know what it means, but it makes me look deep to girls in their teens. Don't need sleeves on my shirt, just rip them off and leave them exposed like Bernie Madoff. They tan so brown you can call me Foxy. Gonna pop my collar like Limba Pop's Oxy. Got more chains than Mr. T, and I pity the fuckwad who messes with me. Cause I'm doing roids till my balls get teeny like Dennis Quaid in Interspace up inside the weenie. Getting crunk on brewskis with my broskies. Cooler than Ice Cube wearing snow skis. Sweeter than the life of Zack and Cody. Higher than the voice of Truman Capote. Yeah, I'll drop a G for that bottle of goose. This party just took a turn for the douche.
For the douche, for the douche, for the motherfucking douche. Thought it was a perfect party. Now it's just a lot of Ed Hardy. This party just took a turn for the douche.
We're an army in the night like Norman Mailer. And it's time to be a tool like my name is Tim Taylor. I'm a VIP cause my table said so. I'ma use some rubies cause the skank said no. I like my hair like I like my girl's drink.
Spike is fun.
Did my last keg stand like General Custer. And I'm assessing the damage like a claims adjuster. I ain't your daddy, but I'll call you son. Yeah, I get metaphysical like fucking John Dunn. I'm holding up the beats like I was Lloyd Dobler. Girls are on the dance floor shaking their cobbler. I'm cool like LL, fly like Jeff Goldblum. And I'm gonna find the biggest hoe in this room. Girl's wax is Brazilian, her manicure is French. Jean Nate is her signature stench. She's got rocks on her fingers and beneath her areolas. Her garden's more savage than Chicha-Cherry Cola. Her heels are as clear as my intentions to bang her. Hope she's birth controlled like Margaret Sanger. Gonna bone her, stabone her, Mike Seaver, her beaver. Take her gold for cash, then motherfucking leave her. I ain't in love with you, cousin. I ain't George Michael Bruce. This party just took a turn for the douche.
For the douche, for the douche, for the motherfucking douche. Thought it was a perfect party. Now it's just a lot of Ed Hardy. This party just took a turn for the douche, for the douche, for the motherfucking douche. Thought it was a perfect party. Now it's just a lot of Ed Hardy. This party just took a turn for the douche.
Fuck you.
And for better or worse, that was This Party Took a Turn for the Douche. Again, from All Over Your Face, Garfunkel and Oates. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Name of this show, Bathrobe Spears, Broadsides. That's me, I'm Robert Norris. And I do a lot of chittering and chattering about civil rights issues for folks outside and some of us who are inside. If you want to help this radio station and you want to make $500, we're still looking for a studio space. 10 by 10, indoors or outdoors. We'll set up our own structure if need be. Access required to the internet, access to electricity, access to some kind of a flushing device that will get rid of human waste products. And then you will have yourself $500. We can lease the place for a year or pay it on a month by month and give you a smaller but still not... unsneezable amount of money. So get in touch by calling me on the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and my home phone at 831-423-4833, 831-423-4833, or 423-HUFF, or HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. A reminder, next Wednesday, HUFF will be meeting. In case you thought we were dead, we're not. We're barely alive, but we're still crawling, creeping, and taking deep breaths when we can. At the Sub Rosa Cafe, that's going to be at 11 o'clock on next Wednesday, which I guess is the first, second, third, fourth, looks like the 5th of June, is that right? First, second, third, fourth, I guess it's the 6th. In any case, it's the next Wednesday, 11 a.m. Come on down and talk about what we can do to stop the yuppie scum from scumming all over Santa Cruz and screwing over those who are outside and wish to just to survive. And now here's a survivor from Berkeley, Carol Denny. Okay, well, today is May 9th, or an early afternoon. I'm talking with activist Carol Denny of Berkeley. Hi, Carol.
Hey, how you doing?
Well, I'm winded, but you're the one who should be winded. You were running around all day yesterday dealing with the DBA's continuing war on flyers. And just a quick correction. I talked about June. Of course, Wednesday is May, and it's... Looks like May 16th coming up is going to be the HUFF meeting, and I wouldn't want to lead anyone astray. We don't want you to miss that meeting if, by some strange chance, you decide you want to come. You can also contact HUFF if you want to engage in civil rights work with us, checking over public records, preparing little protests, writing up information, writing letters, stories for Santa Cruz Indie Media or other websites that try to pass on the real story as distinguished from the fake news, perhaps, stories that you get from the Santa Cruz Urinal, which is my way of describing the Santa Cruz Sentinel. Back to Carol Denny. According to this fire I got.
That's right. You know, the DBA is firmly convinced that flyers are out to get you. Posters, flyers, anything with information on it attached to a Berkeley light pole.
And the DBA, we should say, is the Downtown Business Association of Berkeley.
Downtown Business Association is the accurate way to say what they prefer to be called, which is the Downtown Berkeley Association.
Oh, I see.
So they originally were called the Downtown Business Association, but quickly figured out that people were not nearly as supportive as if it made it sound as though it was all about Berkeley, which it's not.
Does the DBA consist of mostly of all businesses democratically run, or is it a few big businesses?
It's kind of both. What they finally did in the very, very beginning, we had a merchants association that was voluntary, and it was populated by the people who ran the stores rather than necessarily the people who owned the property. And as you can imagine, that first population, people who were running stores, is a different population than people who live in Chicago who just happen to own five or six blocks of downtown Berkeley. So what we have right now is a board-run organization that is beholden to those out-of-towners and the few people who are big property owners in Berkeley, as opposed to the people who run the stores.
When did that shift occur, do you know?
I wish I knew. Good question.
Mm-hmm.
Good question. But I think it was pretty early in when they discovered that, and this was no accident, people like me, and I was not alone, other activists in town were taking a look at the way they were organized to mistreat the poor and thinking, you got to be kidding, and starting to peel out of the organization. Stores, of course, didn't want to be associated with the sweeps and the civil rights violations. So now they're sheltered from that in the sense that you can think what you want about the way they mistreat the little guy panhandling on the corner, but you can't get away. You have to pay a tithe to them every year. Their contract's about to come up. So
it's true in Santa Cruz as well. The Downtown Business Association, it's called the Downtown Association, is, I think they also may have dumped the word business, who knows. But
and they did that in an organized fashion at the state level. So they're protected by arcane laws that happened, I think it was almost 20 years ago now. I mean, it's old enough now that it's one of those things kind of like Costa Hikens for housing that undermined rent control at the state. state level so that it's harder to change, no matter how much activism you do locally.
I know that several business owners did fight the idea of these compulsory tithes, but failed.
Well, good for them. I'm glad you had some opposition down there. And those are usually people who, like, they may or may not care about the little panhandler on the corner, but they sure care about having a voice in what's going on in their community. So I have deep respect for people who see that this tactic is a tobacco industry tactic. Move it all up to the state level, preempt local laws so that only the state's law matters. And then you don't really have to do these little local fights. You're just basically the big lobbyist who sits in a state office, and you never have to worry about opposition because you'll see it coming. It'll be on the state level.
Well, you know, here in Santa Cruz, I haven't seen much of it. Perhaps I just haven't been looking, of people's flyers being torn down, which is, I guess, the issue you were raising yesterday at the Downtown Business Association in Berkeley. But, you know, has that been a major problem up in Berkeley, and has anybody been interested in it other than you?
Others are interested. But I think people who go way back in Berkeley will remember when flyers would be posted over flyers and over flyers and anywhere you went in town, because we have so much activity, so many things going on, many events, organized fundraisers, somebody lost a cat. You know, you had to be quick and nimble if you wanted your issue to be up, out, and easy to see for pedestrians. And then at some point, the city of Berkeley decided that this was a fire hazard. So, and this did happen, where somebody just took a match to the bottom of this layer of flyers and started fires, more than one. But that was one guy who did that.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, they just declared a big war on flyers. So I took this on, God, it must be 15 years ago, won that case. And then every now and then, they just restart an anti-flyer procedure. And the last time I saw this happening, I set them up by first taking some of the city's flyers, posting the city's flyers in obvious downtown areas, which were stripped clean at that point. People were feeling like, oh, well, what's the point of putting up a flyer if there's 15 hungry green-shirted ambassadors getting paid to tear them right down? So it started just not to be the custom to post anything. And boy, local venues sure felt it. Like, who can tell who's having a sale or who lost a cat or anything? So first I put up city flyers. And I knew the probability was strong that they would leave them up, and they did. So I had a couple buddies of mine document that, and I documented it too. Then I came back a week later and put up my own flyers that said, wealthy people only, have your ID badges ready, you know, this area just for wealthy people. And it was a really beautifully designed flyer that looked very official. As a matter of fact, it was designed to look a lot like the city's flyer. But, of course, the green shirts noticed, and they started to tear those down. So we photographed them and videotaped them tearing down the tongue-in-cheek sarcastic flyer. And then I confronted them, and they called the police, but did not take me to jail. The police just came and tried to distract me so they could go on tearing them down. And I just said, no, I stood in front of the flyers and called the city manager, called the city attorney, called Chris Worthington, you know, and did finally get, and this took about a year, did finally get the city attorney to admit that, no, you can't make a content-based distinction on a poster that's legally posted. In other words, if the city gets to post something somewhere, so does everybody else, and the city nor the police, nobody can make any decisions based on the content of the flyer, what they do and don't tear down. So I thought, yay, Carol Denny saved the day.
And how many hours, Carol, of energy did you expend doing that?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't keep track, but it was quite a project. And I had photographs and stuff, wrote some articles about it, you know, got this into at least the dialogue such that the city can have between the cops and these green-shirted ambassadors and the city council and so forth. So, of course, I thought I had won a battle.
And it felt worthwhile to do it, in spite of the energy and time.
Well, it's crucial for me. Without my First Amendment, I'm not sure I want to be here. So yesterday I'm walking downtown, and I'm seeing the green shirts tearing down flyers on what I know is a legal place to post, the metal city light poles. So I go, hey, buddy. I run over to him, and I say, quit that. That's legally posted flyer. You're not allowed to tear them down. He goes, I'm just doing my job. I'm just doing what I'm told. I said, really? Get on the horn. I want to talk to your supervisor. So he gets on the horn. His supervisor says, oh, well, don't pay any attention to whoever's telling you can't do that. Of course you can do that. That's your job. Keep doing it. And I just said, tell that supervisor to come down here right away. So down comes the supervisor, another big green shirt, Jerome Young, who says the same thing. Well, my supervisor told me that's how we do it, you know. And I just said, get on the phone. Get that supervisor on the phone. And then I heard the funniest thing. A female voice, this is the supervisor of all the green shirts in downtown Berkeley, saying, well, if the city wrote the flyer, you can leave it up. But if anybody else wrote the flyer, you have to tear it down. That's your job. And I heard this voice, and I thought, this is great. They're, like, that didn't take long. It was only 6 years ago I had what was supposed to be this big First Amendment victory. So I said, ask her to come down here. And they said, nah, she doesn't come out, so she's stuck in the office somehow. And I said, okay, that's fine. Just give me her name. So they give me her name. And I first went up to the city manager's office, which is on the fifth floor, right nearby where they were tearing down posters. Mm-hmm. And so I went up there, and they said, oh, the city manager's in a meeting. She can't come out. And I just said, okay, who else you got? You got a deputy city manager? You got an assistant city manager? You got somebody who works in that office? Because this won't take long, and it won't be hard. So they sent out this really nice woman named Bree, who caught on right away. She goes, I get it. So, and I remember this. So, what'd you like me to do? And I said, right away, get on the phone to, and I gave her the name of the supervisor lady. And I said, you might want to cue in John Kaner, because apparently this is happening under his nose. He's the CEO of the DBA, the Downtown Berkeley Association. And I just said, tell him to knock it off right away, because they're out there tearing down posters right now. It may not seem like an emergency to you, but if you lost your cat, it's an emergency. So she laughed, and she got it. She did that. She got on the phone straight away to the DBA. So I just went off to the gym, let a couple of hours go by so that I could decompress, too. And then I went by the DBA's office and introduced myself, and just said, I'm just really trying to get a chance to talk to whoever's in charge. I understand that there's some change over here, but the interim person in charge of the green shirt crew, so that I can make sure we have this straight about flyers and stuff. She goes, well, that's me. So we sat down, and she told me, yes, my understanding is, and then she described this thing, city flyers up, everybody else's flyers down. And I said, well, now, that's why I came by. I need to know who told you that was the way things are, because I know you're new. She's replacing Lance Gouret, who is supposedly schooled in this new, in a different approach to the First Amendment only 6 years ago. And she goes, well, perhaps you want to talk to John Kaner. And she's giving me a look like he's right in the next room. So, you need to talk to him. He's the one who told me. So out comes John Kaner, the CEO. He, of course, knows who I am because I write articles about the Downtown Berkeley Association all the time. And he goes, yes. So my understanding is it's not that. It's not what she just described. It's that we can take down everything except nonprofit flyers. That they leave up city flyers. They leave up flyers from nonprofits, but everything else gets taken right down. And I said, well, you're still not on the right track, John. I don't know what to say because we went over this 6 years ago. He goes, well, but we're suspending the policy. I just got a call from Bree. We're suspending the policy. And I said, yeah, but that doesn't really convince me that you have clarity about First Amendment rights, which matter. So here's what I'd like you to do is just write me a little note that says the policy is suspended, and then alert me when you reorganize the policy with the city. I want to be there because I'm tired of this. And he agreed. Now, his word is worth nothing to me, of course. You understand that, Robert. But it was a nice moment where basically he politely conceded defeat. He had already gotten on the walkie-talkies. That's what they use up there. It's so cute and old-fashioned. Gotten on the walkie-talkies to tell everybody to stop tearing down posters. And I haven't had time today, but my plan is to go up and not use tape, but wheat paste the First Amendment all over downtown. Correct. I want that to be everywhere, because here's the main takeaway. Nobody but me raised an issue about this. Not a single city council representative noticed or cared. The city manager didn't notice or care. The CEO of the green shirts didn't notice or care. Not a single student cares enough about their First Amendment to notice or care. Can I really be the only person in the city of Berkeley who remembers what People's Park is about?
Oh, I was driving through Berkeley yesterday, so maybe if you contacted me, I would have been one. But
they do not have. I think most people just assume if they're tearing down flyers, then they must have a right to do it.
Oh yeah,
but
of course.
They don't. Not only that, they're using our money to do it. I'm paying to have my own flyers torn down. So I used that moment, too, to lean in and talk to this woman, Ariana Woods, who's the temporary person in charge of the green shirts. And I said, you know, I'm a musician. You know, you're supposed to be revitalizing downtown and boosting the local businesses and stuff. And look at this. You're tearing down their flyers. So I took the flyers, you know, I had gotten them from the guy who had torn them down and brought them in and laid them out on the table. And I said, you might want to call, you know, the DNA Lounge and this summer jobs program. And we carefully wrote down all the phone numbers of all the businesses who had paid good money to have somebody go out and put up flyers. They don't tend to do it themselves. They tend to hire flyering companies. And it costs money. These are businesses who just live off a tiny margin. And I said, you really should apologize, because this is wrong. You don't have the right to tear their flyers down. And at first she said, well, it's in our contract. I said, oh, show me the contract. This I got to see. And then she backed away. She goes, well, it won't be, you know, written in the contract. I said, oh, I thought that's what you said. You know, so I had my fun with her, but you know, they got my point, and then I had to go, and they probably had a good laugh at my expense. And
but Carol,
probably up there doing it all over again.
Did you get the treasured statement from John what's-his-name?
Yeah, but what it says is, you know, that they're suspending it as of that day. And, of course, all of the organizing that they do with the city council and the city manager in the city of Berkeley is done in back rooms where they don't invite me. So one of the things that I intend to do in the next couple of hours is send a note to the city manager and demand to be a part of that meeting. They don't have, and also a letter to the city council and say, hey, this guy's contract is coming up, and I remember demanding that they have oversight last year, and here they are tearing down community flyers again. Here they are, and that's not all. I mean, they do many, many things that are iffy regarding the civil rights of other people. So all over town, for instance, I just got done documenting all of the sidewalk blocking by merchants and merchant table chairs and stuff that is absolutely without permit. And they can't give permits right now because they issued permits from the wrong department. So they have to retire and remove the whole apparatus for giving out permits before they can issue fresh new ones. So it's really comic to me right now because the police are very, very enthusiastic about running up to people who have, oh, they've made handmade jeans patches and artwork and have it laid out on blankets. and they're really, really interested in making sure that it conforms to a footprint that hasn't even been born yet, a 9x9 footprint that has yet to become City of Berkeley law.
Sounds like Santa Cruz. Tell us a little bit about the ambassadors. Are they a foreign group? I mean, we had the hosts here, but the hosts were retired in favor of First Alarm Security, and then they were kind of relegated to the city buildings and the library to make sure people didn't misbehave, you know, fall asleep in the library, huh. Things like that. And instead, we now have Parks and Rec patrolling Pacific Avenue and other areas and issuing what we call police-initiated stay-away orders, which don't come from courts, but come from a police officer. Anytime you get an infraction, he can ban you for a day. And if you get an infraction in the next week in any area, he can ban you for a week. And if you violate any of these orders, you get up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine.
What do you know? So that's something new, isn't it?
Well, 2013, and they've been expanding it ever since. And we've been the only one person has actually taken it. We said they had no appeal process. So they wrote in an appeal process that said you can appeal this to the city manager, of course, who runs the whole program. And only one person actually took it to appeal. That was Keith McHenry. And, of course, he lost. So.
Wow. I'm glad he at least tried, because that really sounds exactly like what the University of California police did in the early days of 1991's People's Park Defense. They would just issue these stay-away orders. Like, everybody got one. I got one. As soon as they hauled you away, they didn't want to keep you in jail. They didn't really have the capacity. They have a puny little holding cell on campus, and they actually converted a tennis court where they kept us for a while before we all went to Santa Rita. But, no, the stay-away order was something that most people, if they have a kind of, you know, trafficked-up background anyway, they just didn't want to fight for their rights after they got one of those. So sorry that's happening down there. Well, our green shirt program just had a changeover. It had been governed for, I don't know, more than 10 years by the Kentucky group Block by Block. And it's apparently changing over to something called Street Plus, a very similar organization. And I don't know why, but you should have seen the eyebrows fly around when I asked about it. Apparently, like, people were very unhappy with Block by Block. And the woman I was talking to, Ariana Woods, was working for Block by Block. That's who was paying her. So apparently it goes like this. I'm paying the city of Berkeley with my taxes. The city of Berkeley, it has a contract with the Downtown Berkeley Association, and they are spending money to hire Block by Block, which is now changing over to Street Plus. And I don't know what that story is. It's probably a good one. I mean, it probably has something to do with Block by Block's group having beaten up two homeless guys.
I remember, yeah.
Probably had to pay out. By now, they've probably paid that out and kept it quiet. But I don't know what the status of that lawsuit is. All I know is that was international.
Now, getting back to your work, though, here yesterday, when you did this years ago, did you have any legal help, or was this all Carol Denny pro bono?
Carol Denny pro bono, no legal help. I mean, what happens is I'll turn to one of the many lawyers I used to work with back in the early, late 80s and early 90s, and they all look at me like, look, are you getting evicted in the next 3 hours? Because if you're not, this can wait. And I get that. I get it. But nobody's got time for, you know, what seems frivolous to them, the civil rights or human rights violation. So what I do is use the mighty power of the press and the and song places where I sing songs and stuff like that, and just try to get and like my main mission really is just to raise the quotient of people in any given town who have clarity about this kind of relatively low-grade corruption, and so that when they hear the, you know, when they hear the bullshit, they can call it and can say, yeah, but that's not really true, is it? Because of Costa Hawkins, or that's not really true. You know, they they can come back. And I think that's happening in Berkeley. I'm really thrilled about the people I've heard talk about People's Park these days as opposed to 1991, which is about 26 years ago. People now know that what was destroyed there at one point was housing. And that took, I mean, that's been decades to make sure people understood that. A lot of people thought it was always a park. You know, they didn't really have a sense of its history. So, I don't know.
Well, the latest scam with People's Park, of course, is to turn it into housing. You want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah. The University of California at Berkeley has admitted they have 8 different sites for housing that they already own, that they already can utilize to build housing, and that's not even counting.
And back to the People's Park update in a moment, but first this musical break.
And joining me now, former New York mayor and newest member of Donald Trump's legal team, for now, Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani, thank you for being here, Mr. Mayor. Tell us, what is the latest regarding the president's legal trouble? We hardly hear anything about it these days.
Well, the special counsel would like to interview the president. There's no secret about that. Every lawyer in America thinks he shouldn't be.
You have set your own parameters for this potential meeting of no more than 2 to 3 hours, arguing that anything longer would cut into the president's golf practice and also General Hospital, which the president likes to watch in real time. You think Robert Mueller will agree to those terms?
Now, here's what it's all about. It's real simple. And American people can follow this along with me. Right now, a lot of things point in the direction of they made up their mind that Comey's telling the truth and not the president. When you look at those questions about what does the president think?
Nothing.
What does the president feel?
Nothing.
What does the president really desire?
Absolute power resulting in the annihilation of democracy and the love and affection of a man he never received from his own father. I'm just spitballing.
This is a completely tainted investigation.
Speaking of taint, let's move on to the $130,000 in hush money paid to Stormy Daniels, which apparently was, funneled through Michael Cohen's law firm?
Funneled through a law firm, and the president repaid it.
He repaid it?
Yep.
I thought we were pretending he didn't know anything about it.
This has become a witch hunt, like the president said.
Mr. Mayor, many people are surprised by this bromance. I mean, after all, Donald Trump is a washed-up, paranoid, egocentric, attention-craving, 3-time divorcee from Queens, New York, and you're from Brooklyn.
You know President Trump.
I don't know her.
It breaks my heart. This is our best president in my memory. He fired Comey because Comey would not.
Tales about his crimes. Taller than a tree. Michael Cohen defends. Then on Fox and Friends, Rudy spills the tea.
There was something, a one-time affair.
Now the story's changed.
He was definitely reimbursed.
Now his cred's decreased. Both a bit uncouth, neither tells the truth, Rudy and the Beast.
I told the president you're going to get the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's great. And if he's getting the Nobel Peace Prize, I'm taking home this year's Tony Award for Best Leading Actress in a f***ing musical.
Crushing all his claims.
I'm giving you a fact now that you don't know.
Leaking all his lies.
And he wasn't totally familiar with everything.
Still as buds their best. Watch out, Kanye West. Here comes Crazy Eyes.
Wow.
What a big reveal.
It was entirely reimbursed out of personal funds.
Look who signed the checks. This was information that the president didn't know at the time. Sada Huckabee nearly shit when she learned he paid for sex.
The president's new lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, accidentally tells the truth.
And if he's locked up, not to be released, he can thank the jewels. What a pair of tools, Rudy and the
be though I'd bet my gooch he won't outlast the mooch. Rudy and the Bee.
That'll do for now, Mr. Mayor. The president is a lucky man. With you at the helm of his defense team, he'll be in jail by August.
He's our president.
Well, we'll see.
This has become a witch hunt.
Stay out of the West Wing, girl.
And that was Randy Rainbow's latest, Rudy and the Beast, which you can not only hear, but see on YouTube with all the accompanying visual comic effects. Check it out. Randy Rainbow.
The work I just did, which was to assess the campus itself, they have over 50 acres of open space up there, and that's not counting their sports courts. You know, so I just wrote a satirical article where, like, geologists and archaeologists discover 50 acres of open space on the UC Berkeley campus available for housing. And after that, the editor of the paper I wrote it for got all these calls that said, how did she know? Because they're going to raise a third of the buildings up here. I mean, they're going to get rid of them. There's even more open space than that. It was a pretty conservative estimate. And we just laughed. She sent me copies of those letters. What they're planning, what they want to do is just destroy People's Park because of what it stands for, free speech, open space, and resistance to the status quo and so forth, indigenous rights. So, you know, we just do what we do, which is mostly educational. And that's what's happening. They're deciding of all of the eight places, including places that are over 20 acres, that the 2.8 acres that comprise People's Park is the best place to put student housing and then what they call, and I love this phrase, homeless housing. What is that? What kind of housing? Are you homeless? That's so confusing.
Maybe it's tiny houses. You never can tell.
No, it won't be that for sure. I mean, they want to build several stories of housing in People's Park and just eliminate it as open space so that it is no longer a place where people can gather, connect, communicate, educate, and resist. And there's nothing new about that. Next year is the 50th anniversary of People's Park, and I think what they're hoping is to secure, you know, some kind of arrangement such that they just have a pipeline straight to development by the 50th anniversary. So the 50th anniversary is a tiny little cherry on top of, you know, a huge development to come.
And do you see much resistance developing around this?
Yeah. The usual. And I just want to point out that, you know, the majority of people in town paid no attention to the free speech movement or to People's Park or the anti-war resistance or anything else. But it didn't take many to have a continuous resistance. What it took was, you know, a small, sturdy ratio of the population. And boy, do we have that. Where there's international support for People's Park and for what it represents. And it's a city landmark, so we'll see. The city council and the mayor are just really sitting on their hands right now. But we'll see. I'm in the middle of writing a lot of articles about it, and what everybody else seems to be doing, and I always find this kind of comic and pointless, is trying to have meetings without asking the smokers to put their cigarettes out in the park itself. And so I won't attend those meetings. I'm three different kinds of cancer survivor, and I'm just letting them know, you know, when they're willing to have a smoke-free meeting, they can let me know, and I'll be there. But until then, no.
Now, last Thursday, there was a meeting of the Santa Cruz Berkeley City Council, or at least a group of it. Any report from that meeting? I think you mentioned it to me earlier.
Not last Thursday, the Thursday before.
Thank you.
And that was all about
Tabitha, I think, was that the one that was about more sidewalk laws? Sidewalk laws.
Right.
That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I brought, you know, I documented over 150 violations just in the downtown area alone, had them all photographed and categorized and talked to the the people at the Pink Permit Palace who confessed to me this exotic story of how all the permits they thought were in existence are not, in fact, legitimate permits. So I thought that was so funny, and I thought every other newspaper would jump on it and have fun with it, and nobody did.
Mm-hmm.
The press in this town is so bought, I got to say, so that I work with little pockets of resistance press, and we, you know, create our own. Park always had its own newspaper back in about 26 years ago. We started with Free Radio Berkeley, so we had our own radio station and our own newspaper.
You know, I think the East Bay Gazette is going out too with the the seizure, monopolization, or cutting back and firing of the parent
in the East Bay Times.
I don't know if that's worth anything anyway, because I'm not a.
Well, it is worth something. There's some good writers working there, but.
Mm.
You know, what had been, you know, the at least extant free press is being bought by venture capital companies that squeeze it and then kill it. So it's a very, very hard time to be a reporter. But most of us are, like, if I can pay my rent, then I really don't care how much time I pour into this. I'll pour as much time as I can.
And indeed, I'm taking up your time when you could be zipping down to the latest official's office to follow up on what happened yesterday.
No, I know where this goes without the city council being made aware. So it won't take long to do this letter. I appreciate you calling, and I appreciate the work you do. I thank you for it. It's part of what I think matters, because what's going on in Santa Cruz has so much parallel to what's happening here. And, of course, our Street Plus group that is going to inherit our Green Shirt Ambassador Project is based on Olive Street in Los Angeles. So that's another thing that we all get to research to find out what kind of group this is, but they have a video online. I've already taken a look at it. It looks like the same thing. Basically, chase away anybody who looks scruffy and give other people directions to the nearest bar.
Looks pretty barren when I drove Telegraph Avenue yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, it's sort of similar to what I've seen in my other trips. I come up usually twice a month, once a month, twice a month.
Uh-huh.
And occasionally I'll find some vendors on the corners. The weather is usually pretty good. Sometimes I'll hit the bad weather. But it's really, of course, a remarkable and a sort of toxic change from how things were, not just in the 90s, but even 10 years ago. I mean, it's just, maybe I don't have a clear sense of 10 years ago. But, you know, there aren't. Is there still a lottery? Do people still get out there on the avenue with their, you know, their vending devices and so forth?
You know, I don't know. I was about to say yes, and then I thought, you know what? I should find out. But there's certainly, it's very weather dependent, and this is the time of year when it starts to be more consistent that there'll be people up and down the avenue vending artisans, and they generally. I'll just say that my understanding in the past is that they are permitted spaces that are organized in some fashion, and that it used to be that you could only artists were allowed to vend. And now I think they've changed it up so you can be an artist and hire somebody else to sit behind the table. That was a big change. So I don't know what the state of it is, but I know that there are still a few people who refuse to participate in the system they have now and who kind of just go up there and do their own thing.
Any updates from First They Came for the Homeless or the Here and There group that is still has at least two camps, as far as I know, one down on Adeline, the other at Aquatic Park?
Oh, and there's a third one that's at the Santa Fe right away.
Thank you.
And it's very hard. It's hard in all three places. They have some community support, but they have some community opposition. So it's hard to characterize. Everybody's kind of revved up for this next election, and the city council's trying to cover their butts. So I don't know what to say, because you're going to hear very few of them sound like they give a damn.
Well, I know that, you know, when the UN rapporteur showed up at City Hall, and you and I were both there reporting on it, and we had a long, extensive reports from Mike Zint of First They Came for the Homeless and others, there was mention of the fact that, well, at that time, of course, there was a failed lawsuit to stop their eviction down at Adeline, and they simply moved, of course, slightly over it.
Sure, it's entirely failed. I think what it is still under scrutiny. You know, they can still amplify their case. That was my understanding of it, but I could be wrong.
Something about First Amendment rights being an issue, but the response, you know, the judges demand that the city come through with a plan to house people, and they came up with, I don't know what they came up with, that it had nothing to do with real campgrounds that could immediately be set up.
You know. They have done one, I mean, they have their Pathways project. You probably know all about that. That's basically, they've already moved in a trailer down there so they can situate somebody behind a desk. And what they want to build is, it's more like a trailer park than anything else. But it's not purporting to harbor, you know, more than a handful of people. So the other thing is they're supporting a strange little vacant lot that is a salvage yard. They're going to have Youth Spirit Artworks kids living in tiny homes. They voted for that just about 2 weeks ago. And I'm wildly opposed to that, because we have tons of empty housing, full-sized housing, you know, with heat and lights and stuff like that. So to me, this is just, usually there are adults who are connected to the tiny house sale industry who are pushing this, and I just think they're using people.
How's the work at Street Spirit going? In the past, you've had some ambivalence about being, you know, on the team, and yet now I think last time we spoke, you were somewhat more.
I have no idea how it's going. They don't have meetings anymore. They just, they print my articles. I don't know if they're printing. I don't know what else they're printing. Even they rarely bother to send me a copy of the paper. So I'm lucky if I run into a vendor. There are fewer vendors because they're charging the vendors money. So everything's changed, and my voice is definitely not wanted as someone who participates, and certainly not as someone who tends to want to evaluate what's going on. I'm not happy with it. But I did what I could to change it, which is try to reach out to the previous advisory board members, and they all are terrified of saying a word. So I'm disappointed with them. That's all I have to say.
You've written two interesting articles in the current issue on RVs being driven away, and then, as well as, of course, the sidewalk scandal.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah. They're both on the same page two or three, I think it is. But they're there. So you take up a full page there, Carol.
I see. Well, that means I guess they are still using my articles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who wouldn't? Any other? You also were investigating reforms in the police department, and you were looking into that or seeing what was going on with that. Any news?
Fascinating. Yeah, I found out a lot by finally getting a public records request returned, which. It's another letter I plan to write, but it's so damning, you know. So we had a chief of police, Meehan, who was handling the little 4th Street Holiday Fair the same way previous chiefs of police had handled it, which meant that about $5,000 was being spent on a couple of extra police officers walking around down there. And then, when he left his job under somewhat of a cloud, the next guy they hired to be the chief of police was the president of the Berkeley Police Officers Association, which is kind of the voice of their union.
Mm.
And then everything changed down there. Now they've spent like over $200,000 last holiday season alone. And for the most part, it's two, sometimes three police officers sitting in full uniform in brand new police cars. And they just sit there. They sit there all day. 8-hour shifts. One in front of Lululemon, sometimes two in front of Lululemon, which is like the yoga store where the $15 set of leggings now costs you $90. And then the other car sits in front of Apple. And so ask yourself now, Apple's worth, you know, many, many billions of dollars, and so is Lululemon. I think they're in a millionaire. I think they've just cruised over into a billion, but I could be wrong about that. But basically, these are people who can afford their own security guards. So why are they doing like double overtime to the BPD? So that was the question I asked, and like nobody cares. I got all this great detail. I wrote funny article after funny article about it. Like they don't care. So there's some largesse running in the direction of BPD. They don't care.
How many
the manager doesn't care? The city council doesn't care. And you know, you can walk out and see the window of your vehicle smashed in and have burglaries all over town, and they still don't care.
Where can folks find the articles you've written about these issues, or can they?
Oh, at the Berkeley Daily Planet, at the Street Spirit. I do op-ed pieces for the Daily Californian and for Berkeley Side. I guess whatever is considered local. I also do perspectives pieces for NPR. Mm-hmm. Wherever I can get them heard. Mm-hmm. And the Pepper Spray Times. So.
So I'm going to recite those again, folks, for the case you missed them. Pepper Spray Times, Berkeley Daily Planet, Berkeley Side, Daily Cal or not?
Yeah, I've done the Daily Cal, yeah.
You say, I'm missing one or two that I think you mentioned before. Anything else you remember?
I guess all of that and perspective pieces for National Public Radio.
And your history of Berkeley will be coming out when?
Yeah, in my copious spare time, I'll be hitting that, yeah.
You're also one of the main things you do, aside from when you're not, you know, running the DBA racket or giving them a good laugh, I'm not sure, maybe a little of both. You're a musician and a composer. What have you done recently that you want to pass on to us? And feel free to sing if you wish.
No, I'll be doing the Café du Soleil. It's called the Radical Acoustic Café, but it's situated at the Café du Soleil on May 19th, along with other spoken word artists and some songwriters, all radicals. This is run by Marcus Duskin of Folk This, and I'm one of the people who plays music behind Folk This, whatever entity they use for Folk This. It's usually a trio of radical singers doing labor organizing songs. So we're going to do that on May 19th in San Francisco, and then going to do the Labor Fest ferry boat on July 15th. There's another gig I'm leaving out, but I can't remember what it is.
And is Folk This online as well?
Folk This has a CD, and I'm on there on several of those cuts, too.
And how do we get
this? Folk This was an effort to create, get some of the best labor songs out of the broadside books and onto a listenable affair, because a lot of people don't do a lot of these great songs, especially songs if they're in a different language. You know, English speakers don't tend to hear them. So the idea was to collect them all and have Folk This is available, I think, at PM Press, which is online, and you can go to the music session and you'll be able to find it, because the guy who runs it, Ramsey, used to be or still is part of Folk This. I think of it as kind of a family now.
Anything else you want to talk about that we haven't covered?
I think that's it. Thank you. And here's to the people of Santa Cruz who are resisting this strange downtown takeover by moneyed interests, often from out of town. I'm just really glad there's pockets of resistance down there as well.
Mm. Would that there were, but I'm glad that you're speaking about Berkeley, and I'm glad we're talking about it here, and we can at least, I don't know, that's more than just sighing about the good old days. It's looking at the bad current days and saying, wondering what we can do about it and support those who are, like yourself, trying to do something about it.
There's always a way to be effective.
That's the spirit.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you, Carol. People want to check you out. They can go to the Berkeley Daily Planet and look at the Pepper Spray Times. They can go to your website, Carol Denny, spelled Carol D-E-N-N-E-Y.
That's right.
And anything else I should say?
Denny.com. Lots of stuff on there, yeah.
Okay, well, keep it coming.
All right. And you too.
All right. Thanks, Carol.
Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now we're going to have a short clip from Victorious, who is an activist in San Jose. I'm not going to be able to play all of it because it's we haven't got the time. And I'm also going to try to cram in a little bit from a landlady that I ran into actually today. Let's begin with Victorious and carry on with the rest of what he has to say on Sunday after hearing the update of his Monday court hearing, which actually has already happened, but I haven't gotten an update on it yet.
Okay, well, I'm on the phone with an activist from San Jose. What's your name, sir?
My name is Victorious Alexander. I'm a civil society activist, community leader, and I want to be able to share with members of the public, and not just in Santa Clara County, but also in Santa Cruz County, because I'm in political exile because of my political persecution in Santa Clara County, that they ran me out of there because of my political criticism, my outspoken criticism against the corrupt.
Now, should I call you Alexander, or what should I call you?
Victorious, and that's spelled V-I-C-T-O-R-I-U-S, Alexander. And I would encourage members of the public to name their newborn son Victorious Alexander, because we have a great story to be able to share with members of the public.
Well, we'll hear your story first and see what people think. Are you currently in Santa Cruz County, or where are you?
Yes, I'm currently in Santa Cruz County. I'm in Scott Valley. I'm in District 5. That's Bruce McPherson's district. And a lot of people love me. A lot of people know Victorious Alexander. I have a lot of followers. I dialogue with a lot of community members. So I know the moral impulse of District 5 because I want to be able to say this. In Santa Cruz County, Bruce McPherson's district, District 5, these are goodwill souls. These are really beautiful people.
Well, Victorious, let me interrupt you here, and just to get back to San Jose. When did you first encounter difficulty with the San Jose Board of Supervisors?
Well, I encountered that in 2017, but it has been an ongoing battle because we have these personal ethical conflicts where goodwill souls will stand up against this diabolical hegemonic vortex of evil that's permeating all political systems, because the current political culture is that they want to move us from a political sovereignty to an economic sovereignty where the power elites, the economic elites, and the ruling families of every county will usurp all benefits and privilege of government.
So, but again, let's go back to the first incident where you felt discrimination happened at the Board of Supervisors.
Well, on February 7th, 2017, I brought a political prop, a blow-up dolly with a gorilla mask face over the head of the blow-up dolly. It was not a sexual dolly. It was a dolly that I bought at the Goodwill store, and it had an American flag with white, it was a white design with a black background. And it was meant to symbolize that Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors are turning good law-abiding citizens into public slaves, cleaning their parks, their buildings, and streets for free, and now demanding that the immiserated population that don't come from a family wild power or influence have to clean the side of the freeways for free, which is not an equitable trade-off.
Now, are we talking?
I don't want to see my fellow Americans being enslaved.
Victorious, are we talking about prisoners who are sentenced to some term for jail, are you talking about court-ordered servitude? What group of people are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about people that don't come from a family of wild power and influence. They can't buy their democracy, can't buy their civil liberties, can't buy their freedoms, and can't buy a judicial impartiality.
Yeah, but I mean, how are these groups, you know, I mean, how do they come to be cleaning the streets? I mean, are they originally...
Well, good law-abiding citizens, when they fall on hard times, or, you know, they're drinking, or they're out, enjoying the nightlife, and law enforcement will push up on them and want to charge them for some type of crime, whatever the crime may be, whether it's true or not, it's an alleged crime, and once the legal community brings them in into the dragnet, what happens is that they start asset stripping, they start oppressing the people with these draconian policies that are meant to just impose these exorbitant fees that the people are having a hard time. And the reason why they're going out and trying to enjoy their lives and drinking and smoking is because, you know, they're stressed out economically. Mm-hmm. And so the social conditions are really bad, but the people are just trying to get through their daily life. And what happens is that they're finding this political reality very oppressive. And so the criminal state will come in there and want to just, take good law-abiding citizens and turn them in into public slaves, because they can't afford the court's exorbitant fees that they're imposing on the people that are struggling, living from paycheck to paycheck, the working class, and the people that the dwindling middle class, and people are having a hard time.
So, Victorious, you're talking about fees that are leveled after a person has been convicted of, what, a crime like drunk in public or something like that?
Yeah. And a lot of times it's not based on reality or factual evidence. It's just based on the cop pushing up and mistreating members of the public, trying to get through their daily lives.
We're going to follow more of this on Sunday and perhaps get an update from Victorious Alexander. Now here's an interview with a landlady who I ran into who is talking about, well, it's the flip side of rent control and just eviction protection, which I favor, by the way, which looks like it may have made the ballot, though, as I said at the beginning of the show, we won't know until the city attorney okays the, 3,900 signatures necessary. Let's hear what this woman has to say.
I'm talking to a woman in an earlier model car. We're out here on the wharf looking out over the fishing boats, I guess, or tourist boats. It's the 10th of May, 2018, and I'm a fan of rent control, but I'm talking to a woman who is a small landlord, and she's expressed some real problems with the city who are, if I understand her properly, and I'm going to kind of say what she has said so she doesn't feel obliged to speak unless she wants to. I guess why don't we do that then? Do you want to say who you are? Would you rather remain anonymous? What do you feel like?
No, I'll say who I am. I'm Jeannie Jelsic, and I'm 73 years old, and I have owned two nice homes. Not owned them. They own me. I'm still paying mortgages. And I have, I'm by myself now, and I rent out rooms in my house and in my daughter's home. She's overseas now. And the city is, under the ADU thing, closing me down. And my tenants, two families who have small daughters who are diagnosed with cancer, will have to be evicted because of the city supposedly helping affordable housing. And also a woman who was hit by a forklift at work, she's going to be evicted because the city is putting all these fees and fines on me. These tenants are friends of mine, and I have worked really hard to make places that are affordable and nice for them. And the city, under the guise of the ADU program, is closing me down because I can't prove that I haven't changed the properties in 30 years. They were built they're in Seabright and Westside, and they're old homes, but they've been passed for safety. They're attractive. I do gardens. They've got fruit trees, and they're closing me down, and these poor families are going to get evicted because I'm going to lose these houses and I'm going to lose my income because I'm also disabled and can't work anymore.
And I have to say, when talking to you, and again, your name is
Jeannie Jelsic.
And Jeannie, I was saying before, you're in a, you know, an earlier car. You look like, you know, you're not in you know, the richest woman in town here as I talk to you.
I don't know why all these programs like the city to just leave it I have to pay the city to leave it as it is to, you know, for destruction of property. And we don't get to keep the money. It's a public service to have a rental in Santa Cruz. I have worked my whole life to support these houses, and I'm not going to even probably live to see them paid off. But it's crazy to think that landlords have money to do the stuff the city's demanding.
What exactly is the city demanding you do?
They want to condemn this darling little cottage. In other words, tear it up and turn it into a shed. First, I mean, I argued with them. I had to go to paperwork in the 1940 to prove it's three little cottages, and it's perfect for what people need now. And the nice people are in it and have been in it a long time. But because they're going to make me tear up the shed and pay to have, not the shed, the cottage in the back, they're going to... I've proved that it's never been a garage. I've proved that it was built in 1945. But they put the burden of proof on me. How am I supposed to go back in these crummy records, and a bunch were lost in 1954, to prove stuff that happened in 1928, 1939? And I don't know how I'm supposed to prove that.
Have you been to court on this yet?
I can't afford a lawyer. They're $300 or $400 an hour. And like I say, I don't get to keep the money. I have first mortgage, second mortgage. I have taxes. I have city fees for parking in front of my house. It's like endless. And I pay utilities. I don't have a lot of money. I just had enough to keep the houses going. But now I'm going to lose them, and my tenants are going to lose their homes.
And what's the rent an average tenant in your house pays on your property?
The tenants that I have are paying between $700, and the one they're tearing down, the separate house, is $1,200.
And how much space is there in these places?
I don't know how much space there.
More or less.
They're roomy, and they all have their own private yards, and they have gardens with fruit trees and vegetables and flowers. And they're close to the beach in downtown. They're very convenient if you don't have a car.
Toilet access?
Well, they have their own private baths and the private entrance. And
how many rooms are in the house?
The big house is got nine bedrooms and six baths, and I had a refrigerator. I have the room in the back I live in with a friend, and they saw I have a little fridge plugged in because I don't want to get up at night and stumble over into the kitchen, and they called that a separate unit because I had a dorm refrigerator and a microwave plugged in. So they're going to get credit for getting rid of four illegal units, because in my office, I had a coffee pot and a microwave. And in my room, I had a refrigerator, a dorm fridge, and a microwave, just so I wouldn't have to traipse in and bother the other tenants to the regular kitchen.
And how many are they displacing, four people, or have these rooms recently been rented?
They'll be displacing more than four. On the Seabright one, it's three little cottages.
What about what about the main house?
And the larger house over there, they're going to be displacing, like I say, it has seven bedrooms, so there's going to be eight people that need housing getting displaced.
And were these being regularly rented up to this point, or were they not?
No, yes, they've been rented. I had to have to rent them, or I can't keep them. And with what they're doing, I won't be able to keep them. So probably somebody over the hill with lots of money will buy themselves a part-time beach house, because I can't keep them.
And that's $700 a room for those?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And why do you think they picked on you? In other words, was there a complaint from a tenant? Was there a complaint from a neighbor? Did they just wander on by?
It's started in 1996 on the one in Seabright with the little cottages. A tenant was not paying the rent. I was forced to do the eviction process. They told me, if you push us out with your eviction, we're going to report you to every department that we can find in the city and the county. And they did. And then that's when it started. And at that point, they wanted me to get rid of of two units. They said it's a duplex and a separate cottage. And I prove that it was, I found a permit in 1940 after a lot of work that showed that it was a legal duplex. And
did you have to hire a lawyer at that time?
Back then I did, because I was working, I had enough money, and I had to hire a person to research it. And I thought it was proved, and then it's been good. And then all of a sudden, 16, 22 years later, here we go again. And they don't seem to even know that they did this already in 96. They're very dysfunctional and very misinformed. And the woman at the city, Nancy Conception, keeps telling me that I need a 6-inch sewer line. And that is not true. You can have 214 baths or something with a 4-inch sewer line that I have. And it's just like they're misinformed and making mistakes. And they're really destroying my life, my last years. And they're going to put these people that are struggling with so many things already, they're going to make me tell them to get out. And I don't want my tenants to be, when they're having difficulty with children with cancer or on her fourth back surgery for the accident at work, or elderly and not going to get to go anywhere else, or one with the little dogs, they're never going to get one. So it's just, it's really cruel. And under the guise of safe, affordable housing, that's what they're trying to do, and this is the result. The city is dysfunctional. The new stuff to control the rent and all that, to me it looks like what they're doing now, which is to make it look like they're helping people when they're just trying to expand their funds and their jobs at the city. It's pathetic. Because I plugged in a fridge, they're going to get to say, oh, we got rid of an illegal rental. Because I put
when did this latest round start for you?
It started, they started with the house that I live in, the one room that I share with somebody. And it started with that one. And then when I looked at the ADU possibilities, which was costing, would cost thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for dysfunctional improvements and fees and all that. And I said, no, I don't want to do that. Then all of a sudden, they went back and got the other one and started on that. And they give you 30 days to make these huge decisions.
And when did they come back to you? This was, what, this year or a couple years ago?
It was this year, yes. Last year, 2017.
And have you had much conversation with your tenants about this?
I have told them what's going on, because they've come over to, they've been examining the houses. When the rental inspection program came up, I signed up, as they asked me to, and gave them access to do inspections to make sure that everything was safe for my tenants, because I didn't want to overlook something. And they said, yes, it's safe, and it was fine. And they were going to have it be legal non-conforming, is what the inspector was telling me. But now all of a sudden there's like this vendetta, and they're going to punish me for daring to defy what they want to do, which is impossible for me financially. It's ruining me. I feel like I'm going to die. I'm so stressed out. I can't sleep. And my tenants, I don't know what they're going to do. They are going to be helpless and homeless. And it's disgusting.
Wow. And we've been talking with?
Jeannie Jelsick.
And Jeannie, is there anything you want to add that perhaps I haven't asked and that you haven't discussed?
I don't think there's anything else except the city is not functional, and the rent control program is just going to cause more problems and create more. Apparently, they're going to do the thing. Everybody says, you know, keep the rent affordable so people aren't homeless. Yes, we'll all agree to that. Well, when you look at the small print or how it's being applied, in my case, they're not providing safe, affordable housing. They're providing more expensive infrastructure in the city that is dysfunctional. They are not functioning to produce the things they're saying, in the opposite in my case, and I'm sure in other people's cases.
Now, did this most recent attack on your situation come after the rent control initiative was proposed or before?
I'm not exactly sure when it was proposed.
It was proposed in February.
It came just before. Mm-hmm. It started. This latest round started in, well, they said they were just looking for safety issues, in 2012, and they've been inspecting since then, and everything was fine. But for some reason now, they're going for, you know, everybody in Seabright has a carriage house or something in the back where people have been living forever. And I don't know why they single out certain people and not others, other than, like I say, I knew in that one instance the tenant complaining to people just as a vendetta.